For the sake of this sermon, let me locate us in kind of where we're at. Back around Thanksgiving time, we began to tackle themes that were really oriented towards the larger vision of why our church exists. Our church does not exist just to be a club for Christians to hang out in. It is not a place just for you to feel warm, cozy, and happy. I mean, I hope you do feel warm, cozy, and happy, but I also want our church, as Scripture has called us to be a redemptive part of the community. What do I mean by that? That means that we are making an impact both globally and locally for the sake of Jesus Christ. We have found that as a church, we do really, really well globally. We send teams all around the world all year long. We've got missionaries that we sponsor all around the world. We give tens of thousands of dollars to help those missionaries and to help with different trips that go on and reaching the uttermost parts of the earth. Many of you have given to Haiti through the Christian Missionary Alliance and through other organizations. I think being involved internationally is kind of just in the DNA and the lifeblood of what this church is about. But a couple years ago, a speaker came and asked us the question, if this church fell to the ground suddenly, would anybody in this community care? Would anybody that's in the local Long Beach community know? And so we evaluated as an elder board, how involved are we locally? And what did we come up with? We came up with that we are not very involved. That in fact, many people don't even know that this is a church. You could drive right by here and think that it's another one of the doctor's offices. Now granted, it's a big barn kind of looking structure, and so that would be an odd doctor's office, but still it kind of blends in with everything else that is on this little parcel of land that we are on. A lot of people don't even know that we're here. They know about the fire station, they know about the doctor's offices, but there's very little exposure, so to speak, to Long Beach Alliance Church. The community doesn't often hear about or engage a lot in what we do, a couple times a year, but not a ton, and oftentimes with children, not with adults. Well, what about our connection to the community at large? What about the, you know, the part of the community that we engage in to help people, to care for people, to be involved in locations in the city where people don't have as much, and we are extending compassion and justice and mercy? We found that we were not involved in any capacity as a church in those areas. And so the elders at a retreat that we had a couple years ago, we said we have got to become more involved on a local level, not at the expense of the global level. In fact, I joked with the elders, one of the popular words that I read a lot in some of the literature that I read is called glocal, making a glocal impact, global and local kind of smashed together. And so the elders didn't much like it, but I kept saying we got to become a more glocal church. We have to have glocal efforts, that even our local efforts, even the things we do in this community, really have global impact, because we live in such a diverse community here in Long Beach. It's not like going across a street in our city doesn't introduce you to a whole new subculture. Like it doesn't just introduces you to a whole different part of the city. I know a lot of you college students live over there. You live in just a different part of the city than the one that we are standing in or sitting in this morning. And so we began to make efforts to connect to other parts of the city. We began to make efforts to become a redemptive part of our community. We began to do things with Serve the City, like picking up trash at the beach. I remember being out there with several members of our student ministry and some families that showed up, and we just picked up trash as part of being in this community and trying to help this community that we're in, trying to be of value to it rather than sucking out of it, contributing something to the community. But it has been like kind of like running in water to move forward in some of these initiatives. That was the head of the deacon board. it is a challenge for us as a church. But where we sit right now after that Thanksgiving time, just a few months ago, we encourage you to reach out to your neighbors We got some of you to make pies. We got others of you to be our hands and feet and hand out those pies. We got the scrapbooking cult to make cards. And we put it all together and we extended love to the rest of the community by giving them pies and cards. And people were confused. My neighbors were like, why are you doing this? And it was there were awkward moments. A lot of you have shared them with me. You had neighbors that were like, no, I don't want your pie. You keep your pie. This is uncomfortable for me. We're breaking in a little bit. Again, revealing both that we're not that connected to some of the people that we live right next to, and revealing what a great and desperate need there is in the community that we sit in for people to connect with people who care about them and love them. And so we encouraged you during the Christmas season. We didn't do a traditional Christmas this year. We spoke about how Jesus Christ's love initiates with us, how God's love is pouring out on us, and how we need to pour out on others, and how we're supposed to experience the love of Jesus Christ. We talked about that, and I encouraged you to maybe make some fudge or some cookies, or maybe make something yourself and give it out to your neighbors and connect with them again. And here we sit, just a couple weeks in front of the Super Bowl, and another great opportunity in our culture. Some of you have got television sets that are like the size of my living room. They are huge. I walk into your living room, and boom, there it is, in glorious full HD color, right there on the wall. Just gigantic big screen TV. And you bought that for you and your wife to watch? No! Invite some neighbors over. Watch the big game with them. Buy some tortilla chips. Get a little guacamole. Bust for something good. And invite the neighbors over. Reach out to people. Take advantage of these times in our culture that are common. Would you be a redemptive part of the community that you live in? Would you begin to build bridges to the people that are around you? I'll tell you, when my neighbors share about their lives, I live next door to a retired telephone guy from Pac Bell, and across the street from a guy that does a lot of work with several crews, and a college teacher that lives a couple houses down from me. When they tell me about their lives, I'm genuinely interested. I love hearing about what's going on in their lives and what the challenges are that they're facing. And I would bet that you will find the same kind of interaction, that when you share with them about your life, that people are genuinely interested. People love connecting with people. Some of us hole up in our houses and we never meet our neighbors. Some of us just block out the rest of the world and we create the perfect little terrarium inside of our house. We never have to leave. And Jesus Christ, in the midst of that, and we studied it through this last month quite a bit, said, go, therefore. Go, therefore. Preaching, teaching, baptizing, and making disciples of all people. I got news for you. Nobody's going to hear about Jesus if the people that are Christians aren't friends with their neighbors. Nobody's going to hear about Jesus if the people that know Jesus already don't talk about him. Nobody's ever going to hear about Jesus if the only perception of Jesus is on CNN. No one's ever going to learn about who Jesus Christ really is with real people that really love God and really love others if you don't share about it. And that requires us becoming engaged globally in the world that is around us. And so we sit. We sit after hearing 2 weeks of some of the most fantastic missions speakers we've ever had share in our church before. Just a couple of phenomenal weeks of getting to hear about missions with our primary partner, the Christian Missionary Alliance. We're going to hear from the guy that develops candidates for ministry, both in churches and internationally, next week, Mark Lynch. And we sit here in this little week in between. I hate not preaching for any length of time. That may sound a little bit arrogant to you, but my whole world gets thrown off. Like, I, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do when you know, like my whole schedule gets goofy and all that kind of thing. And further, I begin to itch because God's got me like you just in the midst of this church family. And there are so many things that I feel like God is pouring out on us and sharing with us and pressing in on us. And so rather than have a 4 or 5 week gap of time, we rigged into this year's missions conference, both my opportunity to share at the beginning of it about missions, but also right here at this point of missions conference, I want to share a little bit about vision to set the plate for our vision meeting that is going to be occurring next week. So as I take you back to Thanksgiving and I talk about some of the implications of that and I work us through Christmas and I talk about how we've approached our missions conference this year, it brings us down to this Sunday where I want to talk to you about a captivating vision, a vision that is so captivating that we cannot let it go. And in order to do that, I want to go back to really the very beginnings of the story in Genesis chapter 12. Genesis is the book of beginnings in the Bible. I've preached through it before. I'm not going to preach through it again this morning, but I'm just going to touch on a couple of things. When God decided to make a people, when he decided to choose to make a nation that would eventually be called Israel, he chose a man named Abram who lived out in the middle of nowhere. So remote is this location, we don't even really know where it is. Abram and his wife Sarai were chosen by God, and God says to them, chapter 12, verse 1, "Now the Lord said to Abram, go forth from your country and from your relatives and from your father's house." Wow. God of the universe blasts in to this guy's life and just speaks to him audibly and says, "I need you to leave everything that you know. I need you to leave where you're at. I need you to leave your father's house. I need you to leave all your stuff. And I need you to go somewhere else." And Abram, who we know because we know what happens in his life, and we know the rest of the story, is a man of great faith. He's a man of tremendous faith. And he was very, very responsive to God. And God, when he's speaking to Abram this very first time, he says, "I need you to leave everything that you know. I need you to go to a land which I'm going to show you. I'm not even going to tell you where you're going. I just need you to start walking. I'll show you once you get there." Can you imagine? Can you imagine if God asked you to do the same? Would you not have a list of questions? Would you not be overwhelmed? But here's the promise, verse 2 of chapter 12. "I will make you a great nation. I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. And I will bless those who bless you. And the one who curses you, I will curse. And in you, all the families of the earth will be blessed." Let's break that down. In Genesis chapter 12, verses 1 through 9, it goes on, the rest of what God had to say to him. God promises Abram and Sarai land, descendants, and blessing. Land, descendants, and blessing. In fact, you could say that the bulk of the Old Testament is really a fleshing out of these three things. The promise for land, descendants, and blessing. All of the Old Testament can kind of be summed up as being the fleshing out of God's promise in Genesis chapter 12, verses 1 through 9. The book of Genesis shows us the beginnings of that fulfillment of God's vision. I'm on number 1, letter B, by the way. And by the time we get to the end of the book of Genesis, now those of you that are reading through the Bible in a year, you just read about Joseph this last week. At the end of the story of Joseph, the people that were Abraham's descendants are now living in Egypt. And at the beginning of the book of Exodus, in Exodus chapter 1, verse 7, what does it say? "The sons of Israel were fruitful, and they increased greatly, and they multiplied, and they became exceedingly mighty, so that the land of Egypt was filled with them." There are Israelites everywhere, and they have become a mighty, mighty people. They are formidable, so much so that the Egyptians, a new Pharaoh takes over from a different line of rule, and they're terrified of these Israelites, and they enslave them. But even though they're enslaved, look at what it says. Well, a new king arose in verse 8. He said, "Behold, the sons of Israel are mightier than we are. We must deal wisely with them." And the Egyptians, verse 13, compelled the sons of Israel to labor rigorously. They made their lives bitter with hard labor, mortar and bricks and all kinds of labor in the field, all their labors, which they rigorously imposed on them. And so what does God do? The people cry out, and God raises up a deliverer for them. God says, it's time for me to fulfill the rest of my promise. I need to fulfill giving you a land for your own. And so God says, I'm going to take possession of you as a people. There are many, many descendants. God has already fulfilled that part of the promise. And now there is a land and a blessing issue that kind of work hand in hand. When they enter the land, they will be blessed by what they will find there. And God begins to describe this to him. Take a look at Exodus chapter 3, verse 7. The Lord said, "I have surely seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt. I've given heed to their cry because of their taskmasters, for I'm aware of their sufferings. So I have come down to deliver them from the power of the Egyptians. I will bring them up from the land to a good and a spacious land, to a land flowing with milk and honey." That is a metaphor for all things that are good. It's going to just be a land that is just full of good things, full of produce, full of fertile soil, great places to build homes. It is a place that is inhabited by others, it goes on to say. And then verse 9, "Behold, the cry of the sons of Israel has come to me. Furthermore, I have seen the oppression with which the Egyptians are oppressing them." And then he says, "Therefore, Moses, come, I'm going to get my people." And he sends Moses to the Pharaoh and tells Moses to tell the Pharaoh, "Let my people go." You are probably familiar with the story. The idea behind it, though, is that God is releasing his people so that he can fulfill what? So that he can fulfill this promise that he gave them, that he gave to Abraham and to Sarah. A promise that they would have a land, that they would have descendants, and that those descendants would be blessed. And in fact, that blessing would not just be for those descendants, but it would be to all the peoples in all the places that were associated with that nation, which is called Israel. It was a reinforcement of God's vision for his people, a fulfillment of what he had for them. But when the people are faced with actually taking possession of the land, God gets them out of Egypt, pours down plagues on the Egyptian, gets them out of Egypt. It's all quite miraculous and amazing. I would love to preach through the book of Exodus sometime. It's just it's an over-the-top, extraordinary story. They get back, and they're all out there. They're with Moses, and they're about to take possession of the land. And Moses says, "Well, God, can we send some spies into the land? Can we check out what's going on?" If you've got your Bibles open, flip over to Numbers. I know you guys don't spend a ton of time in Numbers. I mean, it doesn't even sound like a fun book, does it? If you have an aversion to math like I do, you just think, I'm skipping that one. That's no good. I don't want to be in a book called Numbers. Numbers has got some great stories in it. We sometimes skip over because of the long lists that are in Numbers, but it's got some great stories that are interspersed there. And one of those stories is when the people actually come up to the edge of the land. They're so close. They're so close, they can see it. And there they are. They're all camped out. And they send some spies into the land. The congregation, I'm getting ahead of myself. They got up there and they sent in this. In fact, let me ask you this, okay? Let's take a look. Number 2, letter A. We'll get to Numbers 14 in just a second. In the following list of names, which ones are familiar to you? Now, if you've never heard this story before, probably only one of these names is going to be familiar. But if you've heard this story once or twice when you were a kid, felt bored, Sunday school teacher, you might recognize a couple of names. Shamua, Shaphat, Caleb, Egal, Joshua, Palti, Gadiel, Gadi, Amiel, Sethur, Nabi, and Geul. I went to seminary so that I could pronounce those names, by the way. I just want you to all, like, bask in the glory of Hebrew. Do you recognize any of those names? Just a couple, right? I mean, some of you that are total Bible nerds, you're like, no, I know them all. No, no, no. There's probably only two names in there that have any significance to you at all. Joshua. We know Joshua. In fact, there's a whole book about Joshua, which is coming up in not too long in the Bible. And you've probably also heard of Caleb. Why is it that we know those two? It's because of this. Go to Numbers 14, verses 1 through 10. The spies go into the land, and they bring back a report, and they say, man, the land is full of milk and honey. It is unbelievable. But there's these really big people. There's these big people that live there, and they live in fortified cities, and they are nasty looking. And so a bad report spreads through the camp that they spread, that these other 10 guys spread. All those names that you don't recognize, they spread a bad story. All the congregation lifted up their voices and cried, and the people wept that night. All the sons of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron, the leaders, and the whole congregation said to them, would that we had died in the land of Egypt, or that we had died in the wilderness. Why is the Lord bringing us into this land to fall by the sword? Our wives and our little ones will become plunder. Don't you love that? My poor wife, my little children, they're going to die. Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt? We can't appreciate this because we haven't read through that story together. But I mean, it's a ridiculous notion. A ridiculous notion. Wouldn't it be better to go back to being beaten slaves than to be out here and have to go into that land that you've prepared for us? So they said to one another, let's appoint a leader and return to Egypt. Moses, Aaron, you're out. We're getting someone else that will take us back where we came from. Then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces in the presence of all the assembly of the congregation of the sons of Israel. Joshua, the son of Nun, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, of these who had spied out the land, tore their clothes. That's an action in the Middle East of just extreme distress. Tearing your tunic and throwing yourself on the ground. Sometimes they would pour ashes on top of their head in order to just physically symbolize how distressed they were. And they spoke to all the congregation of the sons of Israel, saying, the land which we passed through to spy out is an exceedingly good land. If the Lord is pleased with us, then he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. Do not rebel against the Lord. Do not fear the people of the land, for they will be our prey. Their protection has been removed from them. The Lord is with us. Do not fear them. All the congregation said, let's stone them. Let's throw big sharp rocks at them till they're dead. That's what they said. Let's stone them with stones. And then the glory of the Lord appeared in the tent of meeting to all the sons of Israel. And let me tell you what, that was an unfortunate situation that just happened. Joshua and Caleb stand up. And they say, we have seen it. We have been there. Don't rebel. Don't lose faith. Remember what God told us he was going to do. Don't lose sight of it. And what do the people do? They take their eyes off of God. And they do not show faith. They do not show courage in following him. Whenever you encounter it, a lack of focus and courage always discourage vision. It doesn't matter what walk of life you are in. It doesn't matter what vision God has given you for your own life. In fact, it doesn't matter what vision God has given us as a church. If God has given us a vision to be redemptive in this community, if God has given us a vision to reach out to those that are around us, if God has given us a vision to share with people, if God's even laid on your heart personally, you know, I really want to build a friendship with this neighbor or that neighbor or this person or that person at work or my friends at school or whatever it is, whatever it is. When we lose our focus on what God has called us to and we get distracted by other things, by our own welfare, by our fears, by worry, by circumstances, by whatever it is, and some of them are very, very valid things. Some of them are compelling reasons to take your eyes off of God. I mean, let's face it. We don't just willy-nilly take our eyes off of God. We most often do it because we had a really good reason to. I mean, occasionally we're just idiots and we just do our own thing. But chances are you could point back to the points in your life where you go, yeah, God really, really had me focused and I was walking with him and I was heading in the right direction. I was doing the things that he called me to and boom, this bad thing happened in my life. This tragedy occurred around me. This catastrophe occurred in our midst. And it just hasn't been the same since, Chris. I lost my vision. Lack of focus, lack of courage. And by courage, I mean God sometimes shows us what he wants us to do, and then we just don't have the guts to actually follow through and do it. You ever been there? You ever? I've taken a lot of students down into the inner city, and I've seen kids. Homeless guy walks up, and I could just see the kids. Like, they got one foot that's got, like, deep roots planted into the ground, and it will not let them move. And they got their other foot that's kind of like, what do I do? What do I do? And they just are caught. They're rooted in their fears. They know what's right to do, and they're paralyzed in the middle. And the homeless guy just walks by. Just another person that they're walking by that doesn't want to talk to him, doesn't want to help him. I've seen the struggle in the lives of the students that I've been around. And I've seen the struggles in our lives, and I see it in my own life. We are sometimes paralyzed. It's a lack of courage, the Bible says. It's a lack of confidence that the God that said that he would provide for you in every circumstance is really true. We're so afraid that maybe in this crazy circumstance that I find myself in, maybe God's not going to show up. Maybe he's not going to be there. Maybe I'm just going to be hanging out there with, you know, like that bad dream that some of you have had. I was giving a speech and I was wearing my underwear. And so we freak ourselves out. And we run scared from being the redemptive people that we know God has called us to be. This was Israel. God said, I'm going to bless all people through you. I'm going to give you a land, and it's going to be filled with milk and honey. It's going to be abundant. I'm going to give you a ton of descendants, a ton of people, a nation, and even better, God gets them, and he brings them out of slavery, and miraculously, and what do? Let's go back. I prefer slavery to this. And so God judges them. He says that he will not allow that generation, any men that were 20 and older that were in that generation, you will never step foot in the promised land. That land of promise that I have showed you, that I even sent spies into and brought back that report, they will never set foot in there. There will be two people will be left. Only two people are going to make it into the land out of that entire generation. Can you imagine what it was like to be Caleb and Joshua? Talk about watching the clock, you know? Talk about watching your friends drop out in the desert. They're the only two people that are going to walk into the promised land. And God says that entire generation must first die. All the men in that generation must die before you can go in to the promised land. There's only two names in that list that are worth listening to, or that are worth remembering. Caleb and Joshua, they were courageous. They did not rebel against God. It's detailed there at the end of chapter 14. That should actually say into the beginning of chapter 15, that God says to them, I'm only going to let them in. In the whole adult male population of God's people, only these two men would enter the land. It's extraordinary. When God reveals a vision to us, when God reveals a vision to you, and I know many of us sit here today and we're like, I'll walk with God later. I know what's right. I know what God's shown me. I know what he's done in my life. I could name miracles that he's done, but I got stuff to do. I got other things on my mind. I got other priorities. When God reveals vision, we have to be faithful in responding. If God is going to reveal vision to us as a church, we need to be faithful in responding to it. Refusing to respond, even for compelling reasons, shows a lack of focus and courage, and it discourages vision. It discourages vision. Why do I bring that up? Because next week we're going to have another vision meeting. We're going to talk about what God has for our church in the year that is upcoming. I would like to encourage you to be at the vision meeting. Granted, I'm the pastor, right? I come to everything, pretty much. If the doors are open, I pretty much got to be here. But I find it amazing that at a vision meeting, this room has got a lot of empty chairs. I mean, I would think that people would want to be engaged in the vision that God has, not only for them, but for this church, and they would want to have an impact on it. Because at that vision meeting, it's not like just dictatorial, it's engaging. We talk about it. We push things around. We consider everybody's viewpoints. We want to engage as a body in what God has for us as a church. People have brought up things at the vision meeting. Hey, I think we should consider this. And out of those comments, we've taken those back into the boards and the groups and the deacons and everything, and we have made broad, sweeping decisions that have impacted the future of our church. I'm inviting you to engage in what is going on right here at Long Beach Alliance Church. If we are to make disciples, if we are to be a church that makes a difference in the world that we live in, then we must be responsive to vision. We can't just go spy out the land and go, oh, wow, that's tough. Ah, oh, geez. Homeless? There's a lot of them. Maybe we should stick with Awana. Well, we're not going to dump Awana, all right? Don't worry about what we're doing. We're doing, and we're not going to stop doing those things. God's called us to those things. We believe that if they've got any lasting power, it's because He's in them. But God's got more for Long Beach Alliance Church. God's got more for us in being redemptive to the community that is around us. God's got more for us when it comes to reaching people in the name of Jesus Christ, compassionately, with a cup of water, with a coat on their back, with love, with pie, cookies, Super Bowl parties, things like that. When God reveals vision to you, be faithful. Be faithful in responding to it. Why do I drag you through this silly story that's here in the Pentateuch, the first five books of the Bible? Why do I drag you through that story about Israel being unfaithful? Just simply so that I could show you one guy. So I want you to turn to Joshua chapter 4. Joshua's Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Joshua. So it's the next one, sixth book of the Bible. Turn to Joshua chapter 4. God, we are now 45 years later, okay, in the story. We've jumped like thousands of years, by the way, from the beginning of today. So be proud that you've made it through so much history in a single morning. 45 years later, of the adult male population, you know who's left? Two guys. A guy named Joshua and a guy named Caleb. That's it. Everyone, including Moses, they're gone. They're all dead. They're all buried and gone. So Joshua is called on by God. He's anointed by God, and he takes the people into the land. And they cross the River Jordan. And it's an amazing, again, a phenomenal, amazing story about the people. After that whole generation dies out, God says to them, He says, you know that generation that you were so worried about, your wives and your children? They're going into the promised land. The ones that you thought would be prey, they will be the ones that go into the promised land and make that land their own. It is a total reversal of what you thought. You, your generation, you're going to wander in a big circle around in the desert until you die, and your children, they're going to go into the land, and they will conquer it. And what's the first place they stop at? That's the story of Jericho. And the walls come tumbling down. That's where that whole thing starts. I mean, extraordinary stuff. And then we come to Joshua chapter 14. I love this. I love this story. Look at verse 13. We're going to start actually. We're in chapter 14 of Joshua, and we're going to start in verse 7. This is Caleb now, and this is the whole reason I want to talk about this. Caleb is talking to Joshua. These are the only two guys left. Look at what Caleb says, and think about it in terms of vision. I was 40 years old when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to spy out the land. And I brought word back to him as it was in my heart. Nevertheless, my brethren who went up with me made the heart of the people melt with fear. But I followed the Lord my God fully. So Moses swore on that day, saying, surely the land on which your foot has trodden will be an inheritance to you and to your children forever, because you have followed the Lord my God fully. Now behold, the Lord has let me live just as he spoke these 45 years. 45 years since that happened. From this time that the Lord spoke this word to Moses, when Israel walked in the wilderness, and now behold, I am 85 years old. Caleb is an 85-year-old man. Now, just picture that modernly, okay? What it would look like. What are you picturing? Like, kind of a guy that's a little bit whittled down, right? Wandering around the desert for 45 years. Just conquered, you know, walked into the land, conquered Jericho, all this kind of stuff. Look at verse 11. I love this. I am still as strong today as I was in the day Moses sent me. As my strength was then, so my strength is now. For war and for going out and for coming in. What does he say? I can kick your tail still. When I was a spy, you know, they were chosen as the leading men in their tribes. So he was chosen then as the leading man in his tribe. He's still the leading man in his tribe. 85 years old. He's not just the oldest guy. He is that. He's not just the oldest guy. He's the toughest guy. This guy has been sustained by what he saw by going into the land. He's been held together and kept strong by the Lord all these years. Why? Because he's never, ever forgotten what God showed to him. Vision has made this man strong. And the best part is, it's an unfulfilled vision. So look at what he asked for. Now then, give me this hill country. The hill country is the toughest country to conquer. Hill country is easy to hide in. It's got a lot of tricks to it. And hill country is where the toughest people end up residing. They live up in the mountains. It's like, you know, the old mountain man thing. You know, you don't want to mess with them. They're crazy. Now then, give me this hill country about which the Lord spoke on that day. For you heard on that day that the Anakim, those were those really big people, descendants of this ancient tribe that was like really, really bad. And I mean bad in like tough kind of way. You heard that the Anakim were there with great fortified cities. I want them. And look at what he says. Perhaps the Lord will be with me. 85-year-old guy looking for a fight. I mean, this guy is ready to go. He's like, God promised me that. God showed me that. I went into there. I saw that. I want that. I want what God promised. He promised us the land. Perhaps he will be with me. I will drive them out as the Lord has spoken. So Joshua blessed him and gave Hebron to Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, for an inheritance. Caleb goes in and he does conquer the hill country. Caleb possesses that hill country, that promise that God made that they would have the land. Caleb is the one that conquers the toughest part of it. At 85 years old, he leads his tribe. And he goes in with this vision of God. Notably, letter B, last point on your outline. Caleb recounts these experiences. Despite his 45 years of delay, he never lost sight of the vision which God has revealed. He's never let the vision die. It has sustained him in his bones. And he was blessed by God. Blessed by God himself, it says in Scripture. Why do I share that with you this morning? Such an odd little story to share when we think about vision. Well, this is why. When the elders went away for our retreat, and we said that we really wanted to get more involved locally, that we wanted the whole body to get behind this idea of us being a redemptive part of the community, that we felt called as an elder board to move forward in those initiatives. You know, we attached a timeline to that. You know what that timeline was? 6 months. That's how long we thought it would take. That's how long we thought it would take to get our church mobilized, to get involved in an active manner to where every member of our church had the opportunity, the desire, the vision, the fire to go out and be a redemptive part of the community that we live in. We are now sitting 2.5 years past those meetings, which is hard to believe. Since then, there have been a few crises, have there not? We've had some major things happen to us as a church. In fact, in 2009, I'll remember this year as being a year of crisis and rebuilding. God has done some amazing things this past year, but this past year has not been easy for us. And I believe that as a church, it would be very easy for us to take a look at the vision that God gave to us and to kind of just set it aside and maybe aim for a couple of, like, you know, easy things. Aim for some softball things that would be a little bit more reachable for us. I mean, the economy has taken a big hit. We've dropped our budget this year, which you'll learn about at the annual vision meeting. We've dropped our budget by an extraordinary amount this coming year in order to recognize that many of you are out of jobs and many of you are not making, you're making less than you used to. We are trying to respond and still maintain our sight on this vision. We want to talk about that vision next Sunday night. I want you to be there for that. I want us to be together and keeping our eyes focused and keeping our hearts courageous for meeting that vision. I want all of you to be there. I don't care if you're a member. That doesn't matter in our church. The only time that matters is when we have to vote on something legally. So yeah, we do have a membership. We want everybody to get together and say, yeah, we're on board with the vision of Long Beach Lions Church. That's what our membership has stated. That's what they're saying. But our membership is really helpful for us when we have legal matters to deal with. And just to say, we're on board. We're on board as a membership. But if you attend here, I want you to be at the vision meeting. Don't worry about the little voting part that we do. We want to cross-pollinate one another's lives. We want to cross-pollinate what God is doing in our midst. We want there to be engagement. We don't want there to be engagement from those of you that have been a part of this church only for 50 years. I'd love to have engagement from those of you that have been a part of this church for about 50 days, for a couple of weeks. I would love to hear from everyone on what they feel about what God is doing in our midst. Because sometimes it's easy to lose sight of the vision. It's easy to lose courage. It's easy to lose focus. And I don't know about you, but I don't want to be a generation that's wandering around in the desert for 40 years. I just don't want that. I don't want to be a faithless generation. I don't want to be one of those guys' names on that list that no one ever remembers. I want to be Joshua. I want to be Caleb. I want to press through the things that have held back Long Beach Alliance Church in past generations, and I want to press through into what God has for us in the future. I mean, we joke about it all the time, right? I've been here at the church 5.5 years. I know that's crazy to think. For some of you, it seems like longer, but for me, it seems very, very short. 5.5 years, and you know, we are kind of a five and out church for senior pastors. Did you know that? In the last 30 or 40 years, None of our senior pastors have served more than about five and a half years. And so we joke around. The leadership jokes around all the time. I'm like, let's get a search committee together. I'll be on it. You know, we'll pick the new guy and that kind of thing. It'll be great. It's important to me that we press through all the things that have held us back in the past and that we press through into new territory that God has for us. This is our year to begin to press into what some of that new territory is. This is our year to begin to press in on the vision that God has given to us as a church body. This is the year for us to move past where we've been, generationally and otherwise, to new territory that God has for us as we look out towards the future. God gives us great examples in the Bible. Do you want to stand on the side of Joshua and Caleb, or do you want to stand on the side of those other 10 guys? It's extraordinary to me that we'll say we want to be Joshua and Caleb, but we'll act like those other 10 guys. So let's get our actions and our intentions all on the same page. And let's pursue what God has for us as we look out towards the future. Our vision meeting is next week. You can sign up for the meal back there. But be honest, that 6 o'clock meeting is what it's all about. The dinner just entices some of the college guys to show up. You know, I'll be honest. Got to get your husbands here. We're going to have good food. All right? Please, all joking aside, let's be a part of what God is doing. Let's listen for His voice. Let's be a part of this family. And let's have that family meeting next week and make it meaningful for where Long Beach Lions Church is headed in the future. I'm going to pray as the worship team comes back up and we're going to close. And as we do close today, our closing is a time of response every week. I just want to encourage you to respond. I know for some of you it's distracting sometimes, you know. Our end game in the vision is what? We want to make disciples. And so when we talk about buying new carpet, you think, couldn't that be used to like do some sort of an outreach in the inner city? Like, why do we need carpet? We don't need carpet. I mean, who cares? We can't use part of the church this week because we had such bad flooding. Who cares about that stuff, right? We should just dry out the carpet and let it rot, but let's reach other people. It's tough, isn't it, sometimes? You guys hear about parts of the vision, and you think to yourself, well, that doesn't make any sense to me. Why do we have to do that? And then others of you hear about, well, why are we doing all this outreach to other people when if we bring them to our church, the place looks like it's run down, and the reason it looks like those hospitals is because we haven't painted it in 30 years. That's why it looks that way. We got to paint the place. Like, could we just patch that hole that's been on the outside of the church for 20 years? You know, and that kind of thing. And you get worked up about that. You see, vision, like, it takes a little pushing around. It takes a little bit of molding. It takes a little bit of effort for us to arrive at what our priorities are going to be. But don't bail out. Don't lose focus. Don't lose sight that when we put it all together, God is calling us to make disciples. God's calling us to make a difference. That's what our church is about. That's who we want to be. And that's the name that we want to leave. Not my name. Not your name, but Jesus' name. We want to leave His name on people's hearts. So let's be about that. So as we respond this morning, would you really pray that God would stir His vision in your heart?